Like when you're shopping for a gamer chair, the first thing they advertise is like how much weight it can hold. And I don't know why this is so funny to me. It's like... Look at us. Here we are. I was trying to do something, some kind of a cool monologue to start, but I'm not gonna. Melody Sheep, go to, and start the podcast for us, my man. Just open it up. You do the intro.
Me do the intro, huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What's up, people? My name is Melody Sheep. I'm a YouTuber, filmmaker, musician, VFX artist, and I'm just here to drop by and say hi and chat about my work and see what you guys are up to.
Awesome.
Hello, and welcome to the podcast. This is the first podcast, Godfathers of the Medium, the one and only, the first ever. And I'm here with my co-host, Doplex. Doplex.
Hey.
Say hello.
Hey, how's it going? How you doing?
How's it going, buddy?
I'm surviving. Barely.
Okay.
I'm hanging by a thread. Every day is a painful reminder of... our current placement in the universe because the obvious reasons. I don't know what I'm saying.
You're just kind of like vague, dark. Kind of, I don't know what's going on here at all.
I don't know, man. My brain is f-ing, you know those flarp things, those like slime things in the cups that you like stick your fingers in and it makes fart noises. That's my brain.
The Zark Flappy Sheep. Or what is it?
Flarp.
Oh, okay. So before we get started, I just want to say that I've been using office chairs for all of my life, and today I actually got a gaming chair for gamers.
Dude, me too.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, today?
Well, not to, like last week. I
oh, okay.
got a gamer chair, and it,
oh,
it was
okay, yeah.
It's so obviously it's like kind of cringe to say I got a gamer chair, but like honestly, It's kind of fucking tits, right? Because
yeah,
oh, sorry.
It was great.
I swore.
No, it's true. Like I noticed like my gamer stats have gone up by like 270% ever since I started using it. Like
right.
I game hard now. I game long and I game hard. And I just like I can't recommend them enough. They're great.
They really
they're
are.
Just like a normal office chair, but with colors. They're really
yeah.
cool.
And cushions.
I highly recommend a gamer chair.
Highly
for all the gamers in the audience. If you're a true gamer, please pick up a gamer chair and tell them we sent you.
Yeah.
Melody Sheep, you are here with us today.
To talk about gamer chairs.
Yeah, yeah, apparently. I was like, what's the difference, man? Is it really just the colors? Like,
well,
no,
it's a little
the cushions?
Bit, it's kind of aerodynamic, I guess I would describe it. Like, you know, it's got a lot of, you feel the G's when you wear it. I don't know. What do you think, Doplex?
You feel the indescribable need to punch holes in your walls.
Yeah.
And chug copious amounts of Rockstar energy.
Yeah, I was going to say the Rockstar energy drink has like a dispenser on the side so you can just grab one. It's really great.
Is it like Idiocracy where they got the toilet right in the seat where you just don't have to move and
It is like that. That's true.
That'd be the one useful feature I can imagine in a gamer chair.
Yeah. Either that or like I don't know, better ass rest, which is yep. the number one need for a chair, right?
Yeah, yeah. Because they don't make gamer chairs in small, obviously, because they're targeted to gamers. But yeah,
it is okay. funny though. Before we hop off this topic, it is funny though when you're looking like when you're shopping for a gamer chair, the first thing they advertise is like how much weight it can hold, and I don't know why this is so funny to me. It's like.
I mean, it's probably useful for people.
Yeah.
They're trying to pick out the
totally.
Best gamer chair. Yeah.
Right.
All right. Let's not talk about gamer chairs for the whole episode. Let's get into our guest material, though, Amir.
All right. Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so I think the first thing we probably want to talk about is... well, you know what? Honestly,
Family Guy.
there's just so much stuff that you've done that it's like, I don't even know where to start, because unlike some of the other creators we've had on who kind of had their YouTube careers pump off maybe in like the last year or so, maybe they've been doing this for 6 months, 3 years, but your history on the platform goes way, way back.
Yeah, man.
Back to almost the OG days of YouTube, back, I think, in 2009?
Yep, that's when I started.
Yeah, so you have just like this amazing, just so much content to your name, and a lot of it for people who aren't familiar, and I highly recommend you guys go watch it if you haven't.
Yes.
Is based on the concept of kind of mashing science together with music. And can you kind of like describe the typical Melody Sheep video for our listeners?
Yeah. So basically, like my early YouTube career, if you want to call it that, was mainly based around like remixes. I was, you know, I always thought of myself as a musician, not a video guy. But I got into YouTube as like a hobby, and I saw the Gregory brothers were putting out Auto-Tune the News like spring 2009. And I was obsessed. I was like, this shit is hilarious. It's amazing. There's never been anything like this. And I realized like I had the skills to do it. So I was like, why not just try and fuck around and see like, what happens? I mean, I wasn't expecting any kind of traction, but you know, just to have fun. And that was like 2009. So YouTube was way different back then. It was like small. You could like, you know, just put something out there and it would like gain visibility, even just because there was hardly anybody on the platform still, you know, it was just so tight knit. And yeah, I mean, I was lucky enough to drop my Carl Sagan remix, and I figured I'd get like 50 views or something. And like after a week, it started to take off, and I think it had 1 million before the end of the month. And it was just like a totally mind blowing. I had no idea. But I decided to run with that idea because it was so popular, and it was just like not only popular, but it was fun to do. Like it was just super rad to dig into these crazy ideas, pull out the samples and just start throwing them into these different mixes I've been working on. And yeah, it was just like a natural thing that happened. And, you know, luckily I had the time and the resources to devote to it, you know, just doing side work on the side and, you know, pouring time into this channel. And you know, it's been a weird like roller coaster ride. Just I kind of treat my channel as just whatever I want to be putting out. So over the years, I've just kind of, you know, changed my style different times and evolved into this kind of documentary style work that I'm doing now. But yeah, I mean, it's been an awesome journey. And I think only YouTube can offer that. You know, it's like you could just do whatever the fuck you want and no one's going to like, I mean, people judge you, but you don't have to care. You know, you can just go for it, man. Yeah. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, I love that you can just ignore the comments entirely. Like, if someone's criticizing you, you can just be like, well, I'm not even going to address this.
Yeah, that's the best way to go about it, man.
I'm not going to base my content around this comment.
Yeah. Yeah, I find it helps to, like, imagine the commenter before you, like, get broken up about it, you know? It's like, this is probably just some, like, 13-year-old kid who wrote this, like, doesn't know shit. I mean, even if it's not, it's like, well, that's going to help me overcome the kind of ego blow that you get from these kind of comments. But you know, you can't let that shit like, you know, hang over you.
Yeah, I've that kind of comes with the territory.
It's been kind of interesting. I would say that over time with the podcast, in the beginning I tended to find the comments and critiques that I would experience from it a lot more useful than I do today. It's been an interesting transition because like at first I was like, oh, this is very helpful, what you guys are telling me. Like, oh, this worked, this didn't, this made me laugh, this was maybe went on too long or something. But I've gotten to the point now where I feel like I kind of know what I'm doing.
Yep.
And if someone doesn't really like it, it's I think it says more about their sense of style and taste. Yeah. Like I think it's a bit more subjective at that point. Have you experienced that yourself?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I've definitely grown more confident in my work and you know, just more professional in every way, basically. But I do find that like I get a lot of comments like, this is cool, man. This is super rad. And then you kind of just tune those out after a while and you'd stop to like, you stop to appreciate them, and then you only like focus on the negative ones. And so sometimes there is like actual good advice. And I appreciate those people who like, you know, constructively comment, and you just weed out like the troll bullshit and just whatever. But, you know, it it's like the rare YouTube commenter who like posts a, you know, a well thought out criticism, you know, that like you can actually take to heart. That's like one in a thousand comments, but yeah. I do like search for those. It's like a kind of a, you know, a needle in a haystack, but you do appreciate that because it's like, oh, that makes sense. And I, you know, that's good to get that feedback mixed in with all the other shit, you know?
Yeah. I'm curious though, like someone of your size, like are you still, because I know a lot of people say like, oh, you know, I can read like 1,000 comments like praising my work, but seeing one comment that just like rips it apart really hurts.
Yeah.
I mean, would you say that ever affects you?
Yeah, I mean, it throws you off. I mean, even after 10 years of being on YouTube, it's still like, you still look read it and you're like, fuck, what? That sucks. Like, but then yeah. Again, like I said, you just got to imagine like who's behind that comment and like, it doesn't matter. And then you got to remember like the ratio of, you know, likes to hate. And,
right.
You know, I've done pretty well, but another thing about my work is it's pretty like non-controversial. It's like, I'm putting shit out there for free and it's like, you know, educational. It's got a, you know, a sense of like style to it. There's no like, you know, I'm not pushing anybody's buttons or like, you know, wading into controversial territory. It's pretty like wholesome, cool content, you know? So I don't attract a lot of like trolls and bullshit commenters. I don't get like hate mail ever basically. So it's a pretty, like, I've found it like a pretty calm niche to be in on YouTube. I mean, you look around other comment sections and it's just like a shit show. Yeah. I mean, back in the day, I guess like, when Symphony of Science was still going on, there was always like arguments between the atheists and like, you know, the religious people, and it got ugly there. But that's just like, I feel like that's kind of gone away, or maybe I've just tuned it out, or those people have moved on to other pastures. But that's right. Always like a source of just bullshit in the comments, and you know, just dumb drama that doesn't need to happen.
Isn't that funny though that like they don't. Like when they watch that, they don't think that the actual motivating factor behind creating that was just like, you know, fun, right? Like it's just supposed to be like a fun video, but they take like controversy from it. Like, wait a second, you're doing a video about science? Hold on, let me tell you about God, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't understand that at all. Like what motivates you to like, are you really that like passionate about this stuff to go and argue like spend hours commenting to random people on some random video? It's just wild. I mean, on both sides too. It's like, just enjoy the video and, you know, move on.
Yeah. Like, I wonder if they have a gamer chair.
Yeah. The thing about people like that is I think in most cases, someone who's devoting thousands of comments on like a random video, like if it wasn't on your video, it'd be on someone else's. Like, they're the kind of people that are just there to, they just want to debate. Yeah. Like, it's not even really about Melody Sheep.
Right.
Like, when they leave that kind of stuff, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not at all. It's just a place, like, they find themselves and then they just have, it's like a compulsion. It's just like, let's argue. And I go, why do it here, man? Go somewhere else.
Yeah.
So in a career on YouTube, you were saying if you can call it a career, I'd definitely call it a career at this point. If you're pulling these numbers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There are a lot of things that you've done which have been very successful and popular. And so, like, I don't want to say, like, magnum opus when it comes to Time Lapse of the Future, because that implies that everything else isn't quite on that level. And a lot of it is. But I think that's probably, like, if you had to say maybe, like, a main thing.
Yeah.
Other than some of the earlier, like Carl Sagan stuff, Symphony of Science, like that's kind of what you're known for, like now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have so many different thoughts about it that I'm not even really sure where to start. So I'm just not gonna. So Doplex, can you ask him about it?
Oh, sorry. You like cut out that last part.
Oh, I did? Oh,
yeah, okay. Sorry.
Oh, I was tossing it to you because I kind of want. Did you watch Time Lapse of the Future, Amir?
I didn't watch that one. I watched. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Sorry. I don't know what the hell's happening.
Oh, you having internet problems again?
I think so. Sorry. Let me fucking change. Jesus Christ.
Okay. Well, I'll get into it because I watched it for the first time recently and I experienced something that I think a lot of people did, which is like fascination, but also deep existential dread after watching it. Because it's like, it's one of those videos that it's kind of got this Exerbia feel to it where it reminds you just of how small you are. And like one of the comments really stood out to me. It said that like they realized with horror that it wasn't about them eventually dying. It was about the fact that they'd be dead forever that really hit them. And boy, where do you even start? Like, just for starters, how come you wanted to do something of this specific nature? How did this come about? I guess we'll start there.
Well, I mean, I've always thought this is like the most mind-blowing thing that we know. Like, we know, well, there's a lot of mind-blowing shit that we know, but we actually know like the destiny of the universe, more or less, you know? And I like read about it. You read it in pieces, you know? It's like, oh, at this stage, the universe will be this, or in 50,000 years, there's going to be another super volcano eruption. But there was no like one article or video or piece that tied it all together and like strung it out linearly.
Yeah.
And like, I've always thought like, it's just such a mind fuck that everything around us, you, me, the entire earth is just going to be completely obliterated and like just ashes that will decay into nothing. And then we're just sitting here like talking about it. And like, I just want more people to realize this. So that was my impetus. It was like, I need to, I wouldn't say celebrate this idea, but like give it justice and really like, you know, flesh it out for people to like wrap their heads around. And I was working on this thing. I had the same like existential crises. I would just be working on this thing late at night. And like when you spend this much time on this material, it really starts to sink in. And man, I would just like have to like pull back from my desk and like walk around and just be like, fuck, this is crazy. This is actually going to happen, man. This is like, this is real. And it's just, I think that's why it's resonating with people is because, you know, I connected it to the year and then you go all the way to the end. And so people can make the physical connection between now and that like final end state. And so that's why it's so heavy. It's because you're not just saying, oh, in 100 billion years, the galaxies will start to fade. It's like, well, it's going to start this way. It's going to start kind of scary and get scarier and scarier until you reach that point. So yeah, that was my goal. And I think it came across pretty well. I mean, based on the reactions to the video.
I will say, I remember, I think it was like in 2010 or 2011. It was like when the big scares of like the whole 2012 Mayan calendar stuff was like really picking up steam. You know what I mean? I remember I had like the biggest fucking fear of that shit. And like now I feel like now it's starting to resurface because like sometimes I'll see like.
Wait, so you're worried about 2012 again?
Well, I am actually. Well, let me explain why. Because now I think it was, I don't remember what the exact article was, but it was like something along the lines of like, we did like, they like calculated leap years and shit like that. So we're technically in 2012 right now. So the Mayan calendar is technically correct. So there's like a chance that the world could end next month. sorry, it was just a sub point of that. But yeah, I do want to know, like, as far as like, you know, you making videos on this sort of subject, do you ever feel yourself kind of finding that? Like, do you ever feel yourself kind of going through existential crisis?
Yeah, all the time, dude. I mean, like I said, it's heavy to watch, but when you like live in it and you do like, you're just for hours and hours every week, every day, and it sinks in like on a deeper level. That's when you really start to like you walk around and it just like with me. I mean, this is for a lot of like these scientific ideas, like they just are constantly bombarding my consciousness all day. And it's like, just like half of my thoughts are like revert to this stuff. And so, you know, I'll just be having a conversation and then just be like, wow, this is all just going to vanish in a giant fireball, you know? Yeah. And so I don't know. It's like almost a, I don't know. It's like a disease of my brain. That's just like constantly barraging me with these thoughts. I don't know if it's good or bad, but it makes me appreciate like the moment, you know, and that's what it's all about, is just like Alan Watts said, the meaning of life is just to be alive, you know, just live, just enjoy it. It's going to be gone someday, but you know, just have fun and, you know, live it up while you can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really important message. I was just going to say, like, when you do research for these videos, like, is this all based off like your own just kind of like blanket knowledge of like all this stuff, or like, are you actually like, are you, you know, doing like the work to like find out new, like, do you ever get like surprised when you're like just dig combing through,
oh yeah,
you know, whatever your research material is?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not like a scientist. I don't know. I mean, I'm not like formally trained or whatever, but I just read lots of articles. I mean, there's just so much to look into that's like freely available. And then you can like email the authors of like papers and ask them questions, and they'll like always happily answer you. But if it's, I mean, the stuff I do, it's not like complicated. It's just like, it's just piecing together things that are just scattered all over the internet. And you just, it just takes some time to like read it. And the biggest challenge is like, is just putting it together in a narrative format that's easy to digest, you know, and like easy to flow and follow along with. I mean, because some of the ideas are, you know, pretty different and disparate, but you know, it's all about just finding the through line and the narrative to tie it all together.
Yeah. That's I really like that process. I mean, just looking at your, it's so high quality. It just feels like, it's funny, before we started the show, I actually walked down to the living room, and I, cause my girlfriend's like, she loves like the kind of content you make. Like, it's
nice.
And I just kind of like put it on. I was like, oh, you got to check this out. And like, she's obsessed like immediately.
Nice.
I do want to know, this is kind of like a silly question, but just it pertains to your life beyond. When will we meet aliens, and will I be able to have sex with one?
Dude, you can have sex with anything if you try hard enough.
That's true. That is true.
I think, look, I mean, if you believe the NASA scientists, they're saying like in the next 20, 30 years, we'll have a telescope that's like big enough to look at alien atmospheres and be able to decide that there's like biological activity in the atmosphere. I'm not, that's not like a super exciting way to discover aliens, but
right,
that's like proof more or less. And so that'll be like, we found them. I mean, you won't have like a picture of them, but they'll be like, here it is in the data. Like, there's no other way that this, you know, chemical could exist in this type of planet without biological activity. So it's not like a sexy way of, there's not like UFO coming down. It's just going to be like that. I mean, that's like one option.
Right.
The other option is like finding a signal, you know, with a radio telescope or some other means, you know. And that's what the next episode of Life Beyond will be, is like finding not like little like goblins running around or little alien bacteria, but like intelligent life and like the ways we could find that. And so that's a whole different like ball game. And that's the crazy shit where you're looking into like, if this star is dimming at these intervals, then there must be some alien megastructure around it. And so, you know, there's all these ways to like search for civilizations in ways like that, that are like way more mind blowing. And would be like insanely, it would just be insane to discover that. It would mean, it would just blow the lid off everything. And we would have to like, there would be so much to learn from that. Like,
right.
Like, imagine the shit you could learn from a civilization that's been around for like 10 billion years instead of just a few hundred thousand years like we have.
Yeah, that's what I'm always like most interested in. And I know that there's obviously like the theories out there that we've already made contact, and like, you know, they're just not telling us because of that reason, that, you know, like different cultures around the world could strive for that kind of technology that could potentially be, you know, centuries ahead of what we have now. Which I do want to ask, and I don't know what your thoughts on this. Do you think that there's something we don't know? Not to put on the tinfoil hats here, but like, do you think maybe we've discovered a lot more than what's been publicly available?
I honestly don't think so, man. I think it'd be too hard to keep under wraps, and I think like whatever it would be too important not to share. I mean, there's like kind of two parts to that. It's like,
right,
if there's really alien tech, like the Roswell shit, you know, and just like Area 51, there's no way the government's going to keep a lid on that for like 60 years or whatever or more. And I just like, there's just no evidence. Like, there, no alien's going to like come and land like a little spaceship on Earth. You know, it's going to be,
yeah,
it's going to be so different than our like picture of what an alien is, that it wouldn't even be like fathomable, you know?
Yeah.
You know what kind of sealed that for me, by the way? And also, sorry for missing the last few minutes of the podcast. There's like a shitload of noise outside. I literally couldn't say anything at all.
Oh, it's an alien.
And I'm not saying this to be political at all. I'm not going to get into there. But I think that there probably isn't any aliens or alien technology that we've discovered yet. And the reason why is because there's no way Donald Trump could have kept a lid on that. He would have told us on day one.
Yeah.
like that was that.
What about Space Force? I thought Space Force was like a good seal of approval that there's some shit we should be fighting.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I mean, like that's more about China than aliens, but
yeah. Yeah, I guess that's true. I don't know why. When I heard Space Force, I thought like it was going to be some dudes just like strapping on some boots and like going up to like, I don't know, Venus to like go fight whatever the hell, you know.
Just be prepared. Know. Like, yeah, it's just a preparatory defense in case there's aliens. I don't think that would get any funding.
Yeah.
And yet it feels like we should have that on some level, like just in case.
Well, I feel like, look, yeah. If they come here, like we're fucked automatically. There's no way that like we would be on par. Like the idea you'd be remotely equal in terms of your tech, if they're like flying here from who knows where, like we'd be fucked. There's no
way. Like, have you guys seen Mars Attacks?
I have not.
Oh man. It's been like, that's like 20 years ago, yeah.
Oh, geez. Well, like that is like, it's more so framed as like a comedy, right? But like, I feel like the underlying message here is just that exactly, is like, if aliens were to just like drop on Earth, like we'd all be fucked, like completely, you know? Cause it's like,
yeah,
they have these like insane weapons that can just like turn us into dust. I mean, Grant, it's a piece of fiction, but I mean, you never know. It's pretty, if that was a thing, that would be more than likely possible for us to just not have any chance if alien life was hostile.
I mean, that's the difficulty in like finding civilizations, even like us, is like, look, we're not going to be pumping out radio signals forever. It's going to be a little window, you know, of maybe like a couple thousand years or maybe more, but like, you have to be super lucky to find a signal, because, you know, there could have been some badass, you know, intergalactic civilization that existed 3 billion years ago and broadcasted for 1 billion years and then died off. And just, we would never know. So that's just like, you have to be listening at the right time. And that's like the biggest challenge, is just like getting lucky and finding a signal when there's probably these civilizations like us all over the universe, but their signals don't reach us, and then they die off, and or they're not the right time, or maybe most of them are coming in like the next 50 billion years. The universe is just getting started, so like we could be the first. I mean, there's so many different variables, and it's just like, it's when you look at the numbers, it's like, how are we ever going to find anything? But at the same time, like they've crunched the numbers, and there was one guy who went on Joe Rogan and talked about this, and he was like the chance that we are the only intelligent civilization is like one in a quadrillion, you know. He's like, there have to be other ones out there.
Yeah.
Just given how many galaxies there are. And that's insane. That's mind blowing to me. But we also, like, there's equally rare chance of finding them just because of how distant they could be in time and space, you know?
No, totally.
See, when I hear stuff like that, I don't really have anything to base the skepticism off, but I kind of wonder if like, people who say, well, there has to be other life out there. I wonder if it's part of it is tinted by wishful thinking on some degree. Like,
yeah.
I wonder if like, how much of that is science and how much of that is like, they just really want it to be the case.
Yeah. I mean, this guy,
I wouldn't even say wishful thinking. I don't know. I mean, me personally, I think it's just a matter of like, the fact that we can't even fathom how big our universe is to begin with, like, I feel like it's kind of hard to be able to immediately, you know, kind of make the call on whether or not there's life out there. Because, like, my whole thing has always been, like, it's almost like this weird, like, species superiority to think that we are the only beings that are allowed to exist, like, in this universe. You know what I mean? It's just, I don't know. I mean, I mean, I don't know. Wishful thinking might be a part of that, but I don't know if that's like really the, I don't know.
I have no idea.
I have no idea.
Yeah. I was saying like, I have nothing to base this on. I'm just like, I'm curious what goes into that. I kind of want to get back to, by the way, the content creation process. And I have a question, and that question is about earnings on YouTube. And so one of the things, because we just kind of started putting this podcast on YouTube for the first time very recently, and a lot of our fans have been curious, like, how much the Social Blade estimates compare to what we're actually on track to make. And I went on the Wikipedia article for your video, Time Lapse of the Future, and it said that there was an estimate on Social Blade that you earned somewhere between, I think it was like 29,000 to 140,000. And I don't need like a direct number here, but I'm curious, which direction of that does it lean in terms of how much you made?
Low end for sure. I mean, that's like, it's probably in that range. I don't know the figure, but it's not near the top end for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know. I don't like pore over my stats all the time, so I couldn't recite them, but yeah, I definitely haven't made 140K off that video.
Okay. So I'm guessing that kind of speaks to the fact that there's obviously a lot of passion behind this project, because it's, I mean, I can't imagine you're making that much per hour if it's on the low end of that when it comes to the effort that you put into this video.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, look, I'm trying to basically like transcend the YouTube game. You know, I'm not trying to play the game. Like, I don't like the rat race of like, you know, new video every Monday, new behind the scenes every Wednesday. You know, it's like, that would just kill me, because I like to really dig into my projects and spend so much time and just do them right. And that makes me like not a good YouTuber. I mean, I've been at this for 10 years. I should probably have more subscribers than I do, but it just comes down to like work-life balance. You know, it's like I'd rather like put the time in and do it right than, you know, sacrifice just to be like fit the algorithm, what the algorithm wants, you know? And I think it pays off sometimes to do that. I mean, with Time Lapse of the Future, obviously it paid off, but sometimes you spend months on a video and it, you know, doesn't even do well at all. And it's like, well, that sucks, but you know, at least you're proud of it and you can move on to the next one and, you know, keep going. But I do work on the side, you know, for companies and stuff to pay the bills, because YouTube's not quite enough for me. Living in Seattle with a family, you know, it's up and down. It's like a roller coaster, you know. It's hard to like count on YouTube revenue when it swings so much from month to month. So yeah, I do a lot of work on the side to like balance it out, you know.
I guess it's kind of one of the benefits of people who do play the game is like, even though it may crush their soul to some extent, they can kind of count on a little bit more regular revenue with that.
Yeah.
So like, I do understand, I understand why people play the game.
For sure. Yeah.
And, but I can also totally see how creatively fulfilling it must be just to not have to. And I like that mindset is very attractive. I can see why you'd be drawn to that.
Yeah, and I'm lucky enough that like I can get, you know, commission work on the side, that I have enough of a following and you know, reputation that I'm able to do that. You know, otherwise I would have to play the game or go, you know, get another job, which is, you know, worst case scenario. I'm terrified of that possible eventuality, but it's working right now, and you know, things have gone great, especially since Time Lapse of the Future came out, and that was kind of like my turning point in the evolution of the channel. So riding that wave now, and it's going pretty well.
I do want to ask, because you said that you don't want to play the YouTube game. I'm assuming that probably means that eventually you want to move away from YouTube, maybe like more to like, I don't know, a more mainstream, a more mainstream way to get your creations out there. Because I mean, obviously your stuff is on par with a lot of things that you see on like, even I would say it surpasses a lot of documentaries and stuff that you see on like Netflix and things like that. Is that like your ultimate goal?
Yeah. Yes and no. Like, I love putting shit out there for free, man. I like just, you know, I would hate to like lose that. I just love sharing this stuff with people and, you know, just putting it out there. But I am involved in like other, I'm like trying to pitch a TV show right now. I won't say anything about it, but, there's stuff like that stewing on the side. And I did do the show for National Geographic back in 2017 called Origins. And that was like really interesting experience. you know, it's just the polar opposite of YouTube. And I'm trying to, like, you know, look at how to do that stuff more down the road, because the paychecks are a lot bigger and, you know, you
of
have
course.
Real resources and you can actually do shit that you've, like, wanted to do forever. But you do sacrifice, like, the community aspect of it, and you're, you know, there's, like, a paywall behind it. So it's you know, it's a trade-off.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, I'd imagine, like, having, you know, allowing your content on YouTube, you know, you kind of open it up a lot more to, like, not only different people, like, with different mindsets, but different age groups as well, right? Because, like, you've, you know, like, growing up, like, I remember, you know, like, my parents would watch, like, Nat Geo and, like, the History Channel and stuff like that. And, like, you get a lot of, like, that kind of content where it's just, like, very, like, educational about the universe or the planet or, you know, what have you. But, like, I think allowing that kind of stuff on YouTube, especially on, like, such a high caliber, definitely kind of opens that door to, like, people who wouldn't normally watch that kind of content. You know what I mean? It kind of offers, sure, like, man, more education to different places, which is also, I would say, a plus of just housing your stuff on YouTube without, like, some financial barrier to entry.
Yeah. Well, I think of it like it's, you know, a way to share my creations, but it's also like a resume almost, you know. It's like, here's what I'm capable of as a creator, you know, hire me, because I'll, you know, I have to do work on the side. And I like doing work on the side too, but you're just broadcasting your identity as a creator. And that's why it's kind of sacred to me. Like, each video is a little bit sacred. I don't, like, just put shit out just to, you know, hit a release schedule. You know, I'm very cautious about my, what I put out there.
Right. Yeah, totally. And I mean, I think that shows, in your level of quality, if anything.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
I think we should also talk about something which is very, very unusual, which is that
gamer chairs.
For most gamer chairs, YouTubers have a, I would say, rather notoriously short shelf life, yeah, in most cases. Like, you look to even some of the successful channels, like, they'll either usually fall off after a certain amount of time and they'll lose relevancy, or they'll just kind of stop after 2 to 3 years, even 5 years is pretty rare. Your channel is an exception to that. What do you think has motivated people to stick with you this long?
That's an interesting question.
Thank you.
You know, I don't think it's necessarily people have stuck with me. I think my audience has just evolved as my style has. Like, I don't know how many people from the original Carl Sagan remix are, like, still around and following me. I hope some of them are, because it's, you know, similar content, but I think I've moved away from autotune in the last few years just because I'm just done with it. You know, it's just, I've kind of beaten that dead horse enough, and you know, I'm more excited creatively by this new direction. But I think changing styles and not being locked down to, you know, one shtick, it's good and bad. You know, you lose people, like, when you put out a different release, you lose, you know, you can see the subscribers drop when you put out something weird or different. But again, it's just like, I've been lucky enough to make it work where I can keep doing that. And that's just kind of my MO, is I'm not going to promise you anything. This is just my channel, you know, and if you like it, great. And if you don't, then there's plenty of other shit on YouTube to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hear that from a decent amount of the creators we have on that have kind of lasted, have stood the test of time, that it's really helped for them to be able to move on creatively from what they were doing in the first place. Like, it's pretty rare that you have a channel that, like, was popping in 2010 and does the exact same thing today. It happens, right, but it's pretty rare.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, people can do it. Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's lots of creators like that out there, but that just sounds like, you know, you just get stuck, and that doesn't sound like creatively fulfilling, you know. And that's, it goes back to, like, you know, living in the moment and just enjoying life as best you can. You know, it's like, well, that's not something I want to do, is, like, get locked into a shtick like that. Or at least maybe I haven't found the shtick that I would like to get locked into. But, you know, I like to, I'm just going at my own pace, and, you know, and I will as far as I can push that. And that's, you know, it's working so far, and maybe one day the end will come and I'll have to get a real job, but it's going okay right now, man.
Yeah.
I will say, I think the way you go about it is the right way to go about it. Cause one thing I've learned just from, like my own tenure on YouTube, and, like, not only that, but just like having friends who are like creators and stuff and just like seeing things, you know, from the outside looking in. I noticed that creators who blow up like really fast, they tend to like go out just as quick as they came in. You know what I mean? Whereas like a lot of creators that are more of like a slow burn, or if they've just been around for so goddamn long and they've like constantly like, you know, changed like what it is they're making, they always like, they just stick around, you know, like people like Jax Films comes to mind, where that dude has been on YouTube for so fucking long, making relatively the same kind of stuff, but like changing things up here and there. But he hasn't, he's like had that slow burn, and now he's just like this just constant on YouTube that will just like never go anywhere.
Yeah, that's cool.
Did you have a point there, Duplex, or just?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, no, my point was just that I think if you, I guess I should preface it with like, you know, like that organic growth, right? Because I know earlier you said that where you're at now, you think you should have more subscribers. I think you're on a perfect pace, my man.
Yeah, I don't mean to sound like, you know, arrogant about that. I'm just like,
oh no.
You know, you see channels pop up and like in like 6 months they've got a million subs and you're like, wow, that's awesome. But you know, and then you've been at it for 10 years, you're like, where did I do wrong? You know, but I mean that again, that's just right. Like pointless to question that stuff. And I'm actually super happy with the level of success I've had for sure.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a trap. I think because we've talked about this on the podcast recently, which is that it's not quite the same situation, but it is something that I've had to deal with, which is that we just released this podcast on audio formats, just on the major podcast platforms for basically the first 2 years of the show. And then we made the decision to put it on YouTube, and it's doing very fucking well, I will say, for like the first month. Like it's really, really, really helped our listen counts. Nice. Like by it just exponentially. And there's part of me that wants to go back and think, you know, oh, why didn't we do this all along?
Yeah.
But that's like a hole you just can't dig yourself out of. So yeah, I try to just think of like, well, at least we're doing as well as we are. And it's also interesting to me, I think, to hear someone who has almost 1.5 million subscribers say, where did I go wrong? I wish I can't believe I don't have more. That's so interesting as a perspective. That I guess maybe there is no cap to where someone can necessarily feel secure with that.
Well, and maybe it's just coming, like I get a lot of comments that say that, like, why doesn't this dude have more subs? And I think it's like, I think there's some crossover between my channel and like gaming channels, man. That, I mean, like I flip through sometimes and it's like random gamers have like 10, 15 million subscribers and I've never heard of them. And it's like, wow,
yeah.
Man, YouTube is a weird place, man. Like what the hell am I doing? Maybe I should start a gamer channel and then, you know, make a bunch of money that way.
I think the trick here is to capitalize on 9 year olds. You gotta open yeah. every video with what up gamers. Today we're going to be discussing gamer chairs and the secrets of the universe. Like, and subscribe.
Yeah.
Buy that merch.
Okay. Yeah. It's time to, yeah. I'm going to shift my game a little bit.
Yeah.
Speaking of gaming, by the way, and gaming chairs, are you a gamer yourself?
I am not. I
get him off the podcast. That's enough. Okay. Thank you for coming
if
on.
If I buy a gamer chair, can I stay on, man?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I play like one game a year, which is like great because you get to like pick the best game and play that. I just finished Last of Us 2 like 5 nights ago, and that was pretty
great
cool.
Great game.
Oh, okay.
But I do have an idea for a game that I want to make that I'm possibly going to jump into after Life Beyond. I won't say anything about it. I don't want to like, you know, spill the beans, but I'm excited about it.
Mm-hmm. It'd be cool. Given a lot of cool teasers though, you know, TV shows, games, a lot of fun stuff to look forward to for Melody Sheep fans.
Yeah. I'm not promising anything. I'm not like committing, but
I'm happy to voice the sentient gamer chair.
Gotcha, man. I'll write that in the script. Yeah.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. So if not games and gamer chairs, what fills your days, man?
It's 100% work and then family. I mean, I got a kid turning 2 in like a few weeks and another one on the way.
Oh.
So that's like anytime I'm not working is taking care of the fam, and between YouTube and fam, it's like, you know, that's a full-time job. like the amount of work that goes into my videos. It's just, you know, I've mm-hmm. looked into like hiring an intern or like, you know, an employee, but I get nervous about like someone depending on me for work, you know, like I don't want to be responsible for someone else putting food on the table. Right. So that's like a very scary plunge to take. I mean, I do like contract out stuff, you know, visuals or whatever, but like having a dedicated employee, it just kind of scares me, you know?
Oh, speaking of which, and congrats on the 2-year-old. That's, yeah, that's cool. But also,
and the new one,
I'm kind of curious, speaking of contracting out and stuff, in the time-lapse video, how much of the effects did you do yourself?
So that one, I would say probably like 85%. But the problem is like, okay, so, you know, I had no idea this video would be this big. You know, I just thought people would be like, 30-minute video in the future, I'm not going to watch this. Who cares? But I didn't like flesh out as much as I wanted to, or I should have. So I ended up using like some clips from movies to fill in the pieces that I couldn't do. You know, there's like clips from 2012, the action movie, you know, some cheesy right. shit in there. But you know, it's like, just it helps like sell the impactful moments, like the super volcano eruption. But after that one, I was like, I need to start doing all my own, because it opens up a can of worms, like all these problems when you know, you're monetizing a video that uses other people's visuals, even if it's like a small slice.
Right.
It's just a messy situation. So yeah, since then I've been pretty much doing entirely my own, or, you know, hired out or properly licensed stuff. So.
Okay. And, just so I know that we have some kind of tech nerds in the audience, what do you use to produce those effects?
Right now I'm using Cinema 4D and Octane Render.
Oh, I'm familiar with Octane.
Yeah. Yeah. With time-lapse, that was more like all in After Effects and, in Element 3D, which is like a plugin for After Effects, and Orb, both by Video Copilot. Yeah, those were like awesome. They're just great for just doing like space stuff. You know, if you don't need like complex models and materials, if it's just like nebulas and planets, then, you know, you can do a lot in After Effects. And that's what I got away with time-lapse. Was mostly After Effects. But then I used that, like after that came out, kind of rode that wave and used the time to learn Cinema 4D, which has been really cool. It's just like super deep, man. It would take a lifetime to really fully understand all you can do in that program. But it's been like, I love learning. I love just the process of being a student, you know, and especially like coming from the music side. Like I wasn't really, I don't think of myself as an artist really. I mean, my first passion was music. But getting into doing the visual effects is really cool, because you can carry over like insights you've had from music into the visuals world, and vice versa. You know, like I'm learning stuff about visuals and I'm like, you get these weird like windows into the creative process, other people's creative processes that you can, you know, take and carry over to other disciplines too. So it's really cool to like bounce between the two. I have two computers in my studio. I got the Mac that I'm doing composing work on, and, you know, post and editing. Then I got my PC where I'm doing the visual effects, and, you know, just those two stations, and they kind of feed off each other, and it's really fun to just like work with both at the same time and kind of develop a mood and a style concurrently. You know, usually in the professional world, it's like you make the cut and then you send the cut to the musician and he scores it and it's done. But with my process, it's like, it's all mixed in, you know, it's all interplaying with itself. And so that's why I think my stuff is unique a little bit in terms of, at least on YouTube anyway.
Yeah, it's just a little bit unique. Yeah, you got just a bit of an edge on the other channels. I'm curious, as a, just like a super nerdy question here, what do you like about Octane Render? Why do you use that?
No, like real, I have not used any of the other ones. Like I've never used Redshift. I never used Arnold or any of those.
Okay.
It was just the one, like, I saw that there was a lot of tutorials for online. That was basically my impetus for choosing Octane. It was just like, there's a lot of like creators doing this, and a lot of like, you know, generous creators that upload long tutorials of how they do their work. And it's like immensely valuable just to watch someone else at work and go for it. And it's also like, I think what attracted me was you can just pay $20 a month. It's like a license, you know, subscription model. It's just cheap. you know, you don't want to like plunk down $500 for Redshift when you're not sure if you're even going to be good at visual effects, you know. But now it's just the one I'm stuck with. I'm fast at it, so I'll need some time to like break away and learn a new one if the need arises, you know.
Speaking of fast, I hear it is basically like the fastest.
I've heard that too.
The unbiased renderers.
The one issue I have with it is like it's very glitchy. I get a lot of crashes and rendering like volumes like clouds.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a pain and it's like very slow. Like some of the scenes in Life Beyond 2 where it's like very volume heavy. Some of those scenes, there was like a like flying through the clouds of a brown dwarf, and there's like some plankton in the clouds that are like flashing. That shit, each frame took, I think, 25 minutes of like, you know, it was like a 15-second video or 15-second clip.
Yeah.
So this shit took me like my computer like 6 days to render it, and that sucks. I mean, even with like the fastest renderer in the game, I just had the one PC, so it's like you got to be very careful and like plot out when you're gonna render and like make sure you have enough time to hit, you know, a vague release date that you want to kind of stick to. But it's a weird. Like I come from music, everything's instant. You know, you just lay it down and play it back, and then you get instant feedback. It's a whole different game with the VFX stuff because you gotta like, you know, render overnight, and if something broke, you gotta redo the whole thing, and it's a lot of waiting, a lot of like experimenting, a lot of shit can go wrong, especially when you're new like me and I don't like know all the tricks. But it's fun. Like it's just super fun to bring worlds to life like that, man, and just like.
Yeah,
it's like a kid, every kid's dream, dude.
And this is going to sound super dorky, but I consider just dicking around with renders to be like an actual hobby of mine. Yeah. I love to just like render 3D shit. It's so much fun. I'm never going to do anything with it professionally, but it's like a joy in life to see something come to life with all the like the lights and stuff, the ray tracing. It's so cool.
Yeah, man. I mean, are you in Blender or what do you use?
I have Blender. I have Dez Studio. I have a couple other programs. I just dick around with them. Like I'm not doing anything serious, but
yeah,
I just like to make stuff. It's fun.
Amen, man.
Okay, so just to kind of shift topics a little bit here, and Doplex, feel free to cut in if I'm talking too long. If you have anything you want to get to,
I do have a topic I would like to discuss after you're done.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, well, let's do a Doplex topic because that was kind of mine for a little while.
Oh, okay. Let's see. What are your thoughts on the current progress of artificial intelligence?
Oh, I had to
say
that.
Like, can you add like a robotic filter when I say that?
Sure.
Thanks.
That's a tough one, dude. I'm like, part of me thinks that it's going to totally reorganize society and going to be like a paradigm shift. Part of me thinks like it's just going to be in the background and we'll just be, you know, doing our regular shit for the next 50 years.
Yeah.
I just like don't know. It's like such a black box to me. I think creative, like in the creative scene, it's going to be a game changer, like guaranteed, just because you can kind of see around the corner and see what's coming. The shit that like me, like I'm just one guy with one computer and I can kick out this like 30 minute plus documentary on alien life. That's like pretty, you know, pretty professional. And I'm just leveraging the tools that are available now. And you look forward like 15 years. I mean,
yeah,
it's going to be nuts. You're going to be able to just tell an AI to generate, you know, something you describe with your voice. And it's going to like give you options and you'll be able to say, okay, stick it in a room that looks like this. You'll throw it pictures. It'll come up with like new designs for you. You'll say, compose a track like this Hans Zimmer track that I like. It'll just do that for you. I mean, you can almost do that now with these new AI like plugins for Ableton. You'll feed it like a Beethoven sonata, and then it'll just like keep going. Like it'll continue the sonata.
I've seen videos like that. That stuff is crazy.
Yeah, it's gnarly. And so you can, if you extrapolate where that's going, then anybody will be able to generate like professional work. And it's going to have to like, what the artists are doing is going to have to shift and become like something else on top of that layer of possibility.
Yeah.
And that's like, I don't know what that's going to mean or where that's going to go, but it's fascinating, you know.
Totally.
I mean, people in the 90s would look at us and be like, holy shit, you can do that like by yourself? Like, what the fuck? That's crazy. And we're going to say the same thing.
And the 90s weren't that long ago.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we were kids, or I was a kid anyway.
Yeah. I do want to ask.
Duplex, the 90s were kind of a while ago at this point.
Well, I know. I more so mean in the grand scheme of things, right? Because, like, in the 90s, like, you know, we had, like, fucking, what, Hit Clips and I don't know, those little weird mushy things that stick your finger in and it's a little sexually suggestive. But I mean, like, you know, because I guess my main point was, like, do you think there will ever be a time? Because, like, I don't know if you guys ever played Detroit Become Human. But, like, the whole point of that game was that, like, AI eventually became, like, house servants, and then it, like, slowly progressed into them wanting, like, equal rights. And it's, like, it's a video game, right? But, like, it's a very story-heavy one, and, like, you kind of start to think, like, this isn't exactly that far-fetched, right? Like, this could potentially happen in, like, the next, I don't know, 50 to 100 years, where AI is sort of its own species, and, like, I not to get too crazy and too, you know, past what we're talking about now, but, like, do you think there will ever be a time where AI will just say, yo, fuck humans, let's take this shit from them, and we'll be the new main character of this planet?
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think it'll ever be allowed to get that far. I think there'll be, like, safety measures in place, or at least I would hope so. Like, what would that look like? You know, are there actually going to be, I mean, the one scenario that is kind of scary is, like, the classic gray goo scenario, where there's, like, self-replicating nanobots that somehow are misprogrammed to just, like, consume everything. And that that gets out of hand. And suddenly, like, the entire Earth is swallowed up by these, like, little nanobots. I mean, there's, like, some actual legitimate thing to worry about there. I don't know. But You're asking the wrong guy, probably. I mean, I just know it's going to change everything, or it probably will, but I it's just impossible to say, man.
Yeah. Lars, counterpoint.
I don't really have one. I am kind of curious about something, and this is kind of like inside baseball talk. I'm just curious, because just for reference, one of our listeners actually is going to send me this board game that they did. I've been talking to the fans about that on the server recently, where apparently they listened to me always saying, like, oh, band name called that. And then they're making this board game based on coming up with funny band names that I'm going to take a look at. And I'm kind of curious if you've gotten that kind of stuff from your fans. Like, do you get projects that they send to you? Do you get sponsorships that they want to send to you?
Going back to, like, are talking about Discord, I don't really have, like, a central community, like, location, but I do get a lot of emails that are like, hey, check out this thing I made, check out this song, check out this script or whatever. And that's cool, but there's never, like, any, you know, rhyme or reason to it. It's just people, like, you know, that like my work and want to share something with me, which is cool. You know, I like reading people's stuff and listening to music, and yeah, it's fun.
Okay. By the way, Duplex, if you have anything last to get to, we can. But otherwise, I do want to open it up to the listeners, because I know at least one of them has a question they want to give on air.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I have one more question. It's kind of a silly question, but I'll ask it anyway. Why not? Hey, how's it going? what's more probable? Aliens looking like us, or how they've been portrayed in movies?
Like,
I'm talking about, like, full on, like, humanoid motherfuckers, like, not like, you know, like a bacteria swimming around in a lake on Venus, but, you know.
That's a toughie too. I'd say the odds of anything looking like us are, like, almost zero, but then it goes back to, there's a shitload of planets out there. So, I mean, I'm sure there's some. But on the whole, I mean, like, think about, like, what we come from. We come from a 4 billion year, like, string of catastrophes and crazy events that have produced us. It's impossible to recreate that chain of events. So if it's out there, alien life will just be way different. Like, 99% of it will be way different than shit that looks like us or anything we can imagine.
Yeah.
But there's probably that 1% out there. I mean, in my view, like, there probably are humanoid type dudes walking around at least somewhere, at least on, like, a few planets, or maybe they will, like, in 200 billion years. Like, there's just still so much time for this stuff to happen. again.
Yeah.
Like we're at the very beginning of the universe, and like maybe we're the first, and this is going to be like a super common design. Like that's possible too.
Oh, I never thought about that.
No one knows, but we're still like, that's the fascinating part to me is like, we're still just getting started. There's still 100 trillion years right. of, you know, planets dancing around stars, which is just mind blowing.
Wow. You just blew all my right. fucking mind. I never thought about it like that. I will say that there is a theory that I've heard about that it's like technically we're aliens because like it's just some like theory. I don't remember where I heard it from, but it was interesting just to think about, just like an interesting talking point. It was like, you know, at the beginning of civilization or whatever, like I forgot what the exact theory was, but essentially like we are like basically another civilization that's like, you know, obviously trillions of years but ahead of what we are, basically flew and dropped off some humans on Earth. That was like the theory. So technically we're the aliens that are on a foreign planet. And I mean,
yeah, that
it's obviously like it's completely out there, but it's just an interesting thought. I'm super interested in like just a lot of like different things to think about as far as like just like the grand scheme of existence, right? And like that's just like one of those yeah. things that like, hey, it's possible. Anything's possible.
Yeah, I mean, you can't like discount it automatically. I mean, I think that's it's almost guaranteed to be, you know, just some crazy idea some guy had once, but
right.
but there is, I think, value to the idea that that life was seeded from Mars, Venus, or even like beyond, because there's, and I looked into this. This is going to be part of Life Beyond too, but I cut it out. Like panspermia, the idea that like you can actually hitch a ride on an asteroid that hits your planet and get transferred to the next one. I mean, it's super common. I think it's even like there's like billions of tons of material that have, maybe not billions of tons, but like, you know, thousands of tons of material that have been shared between Earth and Mars over the years. And that you can find like Mars meteorites in Antarctica, just like chilling oh. like on the ice. You can just go find them, pick them up.
Wow.
So, I mean, and they've done the analysis, like if an asteroid hits the right way, there's bacteria that can survive the temperatures and the pressures that kind of a strike would cause.
Yeah.
And then they can attach and they can survive a vacuum and they can survive the descent into another planet. So it's like entirely possible. They even think like it might have happened on the moon. So there was water on the moon for a long time, like a few billion years ago. And there was definitely a shitload of material being shared between the Earth and the moon. So like there could have been like little dudes or little like bacteria on the moon for a while. And that's probably they're probably dead now. But, you know, they think that maybe like just maybe there's still some like on the dark side of the moon, there's places that don't get sun. So they have like these little pockets of like ice. And they think that maybe there's like some bacteria on there still left over. I mean, it's just crazy to think about where there might be bacteria just hiding out, and they might be, maybe they're from Earth, or maybe from like Earth life came from the moon or something, you know, like oh. we just don't know. And that's going back to like the beginning of life where we just have no knowledge. We just don't know how it got started.
Right.
Interesting. Okay. So we do have a decent amount of people that want to come on and give a question.
Yeah.
And I'm going to toss it to Jakiki because he was kind of talking about that in the beginning, and I wanted him to save it for the episode. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute him.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, howdy.
So, John, compared to your documentary style videos, what's your creative process of your song remixes such as Chili Wonka and Magically Delicious?
Yeah, so my process is basically to just get my hands on whatever I'm going to remix and just take out as many cool samples as I can find and just organize them and listen to the samples over and over again. So I know what I'm working with. And that way, like maybe you've built a beat and you've got a chorus or something and you need a verse and you know exactly where to go and like the rhythm and the timing of all your samples. So it really helps to like wrap your head around all these, like the minutiae of the little, you know, sound bites that you've got and like where they could fit and what you can do with them. Like knowing how far you can stretch a sample is really important. I use Melodyne as my auto-tune and stretching software. It's It's an amazing program. But just over the years, I've gotten so, it's just like second nature to me now, like knowing how far you can push a sample, how far you can tune it, you know, how long you can stretch it. And yeah, it's really about getting to know the samples really well and then creating a music track that evokes the vibe you're going for. I mean, each one of those songs has its own kind of, you know, vibe it's trying to get across. So it's also a matter of matching the vibe to the vibe of the samples. I mean, you can go crazy and make, you know, make something goofy out of something sad, but I'm less towards the comedy side of like remixing and more towards like the, just make a groove and dig into it. You know,
I really like the, right. I really like the visuals on Chili Wonka. I like the, it has like a very,
yeah, that one was fun.
Yeah. The one's really good.
All right, I'm going to toss it to PN, who doesn't have a mic and just wants to type their question in chat. And I'm going to go ahead and read it out. He says, a question to Melody Sheep. I heard you say earlier that you're walking away from autotune for good. In parentheses, I'm assuming you're talking about your remixes. And I'm curious to know if you think that this is a disservice to people like himself, who originally started watching during the Symphony of Science and stayed for the remixes.
I don't mean that I'm walking away for good. I'm sorry, I did not mean to, you know, get that across. I'm not done with autotune for sure. I mean, I think I've still got more in me. I'm just like, for now, I'm taking a break. You know, I'm just on in a different groove. But I did put out an album this year in February that had a lot of autotune on it. And it was my favorite, like, you know, collection of remixes, is, you know, half remixes, half instrumentals. But I'm not done for sure. I mean, I think there's a lot more to cover. I'm just going to like take my time and not, you know, focus on it for now, just because I'm in such this different creative realm right now with the documentaries. And I've got so many ideas for this stuff that it's going to take, you know, a lot to work through, but I'm not done. Yeah. And thank you if you're, you know, one of those fans who's been around that long and followed me. There's definitely more to come.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's an interesting little kind of side note, by the way, because that is kind of maybe the downside, I guess, for staying flexible with your content evolving over time, is that there are people who, like PN, came on specifically for the remixes and may end up falling off of the content if that's where you tend to evolve away from. So on the one end, it's good to evolve with your content, but on the other end, there will be some collateral damage in the process. So that's an interesting phenomenon.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely like cognizant of that. I think about it a lot, you know. I try to be transparent. I mean, I'm not really active on social media at all or very much, but
right.
Yeah, I mean, and I do say, like, there's still more to come, so I promise there will be. But at the same time, you know, I'm not beholden to anybody. I'm not like, you know, no one's paying me to do this stuff. I'm just doing it on my own. So I'm mm-hmm. charting my own course, but well aware that there's demand for this stuff out there, and I'm going to answer to it eventually.
Also, speaking of demand for stuff, I think if you ever decided that you just wanted to do a side channel where you relaxingly talked about stuff, I think that would be very popular. I've been noticing you have this really soothing kind of like, hi, my name's John, and I'm just going to talk to you. You got the timbre for that.
Okay, yeah, that's cool, man. I don't do this kind of thing very much, so that's good to know.
Lil Sonic Hunter, you are next. You are unmuted.
All right. Hi, Lars. Hi,
hello.
Lars.
Hello.
I'm a big fan. Big fan. Nice to
Thank
meet you.
You.
Okay, so I have a question for you. Have you ever hang out with one of the content creators like Carmen Carson before?
Okay, so I have. Oh, is there more, or do you want me to answer the question?
Yeah. Have you ever talked to one of the content creators on here like Carmen Carson and Sir Pello and Ashley Nichols on here?
Yeah. Okay. So I'll get into this. Okay. So yes. I mean, one of the cool things about doing a podcast like this that interviews a lot of great content creators like Melody Sheep and the like is that you do get to interact with them. And I have made a lot of friends actually on the sides. Sometimes you get a guest who's there. They show up. They're the punch clock guest. They come and do the interview. They're very polite. They're very nice. And then that's literally the last time I'll ever hear from them again. And I would say that that's about 75% of the people we've had on. And that's not really like good or bad. That's just kind of how it goes. That's what you expect.
Yeah, there's nothing really wrong with that.
Yeah. Those are, you know, to use a Fight Club analogy, single serving friends, basically. And then once in a while, you get cool people like Doplex, for example, that you actually make friends with. And then he actually comes on as the co-host.
Hey.
And it's cool. In terms of meeting up with creators, yes, I've done that. Although I will say that that has substantially decreased since COVID, because I mean, you just can't anymore. Like, you kind of can, yeah, but I just like, if you get tested and stuff, I don't really trust anyone right now, so I'm not really doing that at the moment. But yeah, there's a lot of people that I want to go get a beer with after the coronavirus pandemic is over.
Yeah,
so hopefully that was a good answer to your question. I haven't met Call Me Carson in person. There was this thing where we were potentially going to get him into Disneyland, and it just kind of fell through. So, yeah. Ryan in the chat has a question. I'm going to send it to you, and then that's going to be that. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hello?
Hello.
Okay, hello. So, especially with the stuff like your recent VFX stuff and journey, time-lapse through the end of time or whatever, that stuff is always super high quality. So, do you ever feel like it's really hard to push that boundary of more, like trying to top yourself each and every upload?
Yeah, yeah, for sure, man. It's always like nerve wracking, especially when something's like gets big, you know, it's like, well, how am I going to top this? And, you know, it's always so exhausting. Like the final stretch of putting out a video like that is, you know, it's a grind, and you got to like, you know, tighten everything up and make sure it's perfect. And then, you know, the first thing you think of after it gets released is like, man, now I got to do another one of those. And how am I going to do it? But I trust in the process, the creative process. And I trust in my own taste. So I think that's the most important thing, is just to not question it. And just go along for the ride and just be creative and not like double think everything and say, are they going to like this? Is my audience going to think this is cool? You know, you just have to stick to your own creative instincts. And I think that's the thing that's served me best over the years, is just, you know, trying to tune out making content for other people. And you're making it for yourself. You know, it's just like, if I stick to that principle, then I know at the end of the process, I'm going to have something that I'm proud of. I mean, maybe it won't be viral or whatever, but it's, you know, it's a piece I can be proud of and, you know, release and move on to the next one without, you know, questioning if I sold my soul or if I did enough. So yeah, that's basically it.
All right.
Nice.
I'm seeing if anyone has like a really quick last one to ask. Otherwise, we'll go ahead and start to ramp things down. Oh, okay. Here's one from Emerald Soul.
I was going to ask something similar to that. So it's so funny that they type.
Yeah. He asks, if you discovered an alien fruit, what would you name it?
I'd call it the Attenborough, man. David Attenborough.
Oh.
A hero of mine.
Hell yeah.
And you really want to eat him. Okay. I think that's gonna do it. I feel like we just barely scratched the surface of everything we could talk about here, but I am trying to keep it relatively timely here. I just want to say, by the way, this is an episode that's been in the works for quite a while. I know that our agent contacted you several months ago, and I'm just really happy that it finally came together. So thank you so much, John, for coming on. I really appreciated it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Man. Yeah, it was a joy. And if you guys ever want to talk again, let me know. I'm sorry that I think I like blew you guys off at one time. That was like right in the throngs of Life Beyond 2, and I got way behind on my inbox and totally messed it up. But glad it was able to work out. Yeah.
Yeah, it was sometimes we have guests where it's like it takes like a year and a half to actually finally do it. So
yeah,
we're used to it at this point.
Yeah, gotcha. I mean, if you're in the content space, obviously your time is being sucked up by creative projects. So it's, I think we can all understand.
Yeah, yeah. I have people who like I still need to get back to from like a month ago that I consider like a recent conversation. Like it takes time once you get into it. Yeah. So, John, if people wanted to check out your stuff, what's the best way to do that?
I'd say go to just go to melodysheep.com. I mean, it's got my most recent stuff up there, but then you can dig in and find, like, you can dig deeper and find more info on the projects, and like my older remix stuff still on there too. If you want to like dig into the deep cuts, go to youtube.com/melodysheep. There's, you know, like we were talking, there's stuff going back 10 years now, and I'm not excited to share that stuff with you because it's so old, but yeah. I've been putting shit out for a long time and plenty to dig through, so yeah.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, we did it.
Doplex.
Yes, Lars from Norway.
If people have made it this far and they've enjoyed the content, they can do something to help us. And what is that?
They can. You can, so if you like this, if you're craving more, if you want something else to sink your teeth into, well, have I got just the thing for you. Hold on. I'm searching my pockets. Oh, there it is. Patreon.com/T1Podcast. You can support us. You can get bonus episodes. You can get episodes earlier. I can't possibly think of anything better than that. Can you, Lars?
No, not really. I feel like bonus episodes of the show are really where it's at for the big fans who want something a little bit more. Also, if you're here for the first time, we went ahead and put this at the beginning of the video if you're coming in on YouTube. But if you're a YouTube listener right now, the best thing you can do to help us is to subscribe. If this podcast was interesting to you, just hit the subscribe button. You know, you can always change your mind later. Hit the bell if you want to find out when the episodes are coming out right at the minute of release.
Ooh.
A lot of you guys have been joining on the YouTube. We've really enjoyed kind of going into that content battleground, that Thunderdome. It's been a lot of fun. So go ahead and subscribe today. Doplex, there's been something that has been disturbingly missing from this episode, and that's music. Would you be able to bless us with song?
Sure, why not? Let me set up here.
Okay.
All right. Give me a topic.
Okay. John, give him a topic.
Asteroids. Yeah.
You got it. The song is called Asteroids, but it's stylized like ASS-Troids. So here we go. Oh no. Look up in the sky. It's an asteroid. Yeah. Fucking finally relinquish me from this hellscape.
Jesus. Is that it?
Yep, that's it. That's it. Show everybody.
The good news is Discord kind of cut out a lot of that, but it's going to sound a lot better in post with an actual backing track. All right.
Awesome.
John, you let us in. Can you lead us out?
I can. Thank you guys for having me. My name's Melody Sheep. On YouTube, it's youtube.com/melodysheep. I do science videos, remixes, all sorts of crazy shit. So if you like science, if you like music, if you like cinematic videos, go check out my work. And thank you to Lars and Doplex for talking today. It was fun.
Thank you for coming on. Cheers. Man. Yeah, I mean, I highly recommend everybody listening to go check out Melody Sheep's channel. You won't be disappointed.
Yeah, you might want to die afterwards after you watch that video, but still, you'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
Play your song, Melody Sheep, to aid the little ones who